You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. In this episode, we will recap the hitter and pitcher performances from this past week, talk about the latest news around baseball, and give you all some streamer recommendations for next week. But before we get into everything, I'm back. John, did you miss me?
I mean, yeah, it was kind of tough doing two solo pods, but got a couple good interviews in, which is always nice. But glad to be back to our regular programming.
Yeah, my bad. I never want to stick a solo pod on anyone, and it's frustrating, but I had to go to a bowling tournament in Las Vegas for everyone who is interested in anything that's going on. I had to do that. We bowled terrible. It was super, super hard, but we had a good time in Vegas. It's the first time I've ever left Vegas up money from gambling, so I will take that any day of the week. It was a big win on the trip. Had a great time. It was really, really cool, but the bowling portion was very tragic. It was tough. It's the worst I've done in the 5 years that I've bowled in this tournament, so not great on that front. But good news is fantasy baseball is going very well for me, so hopefully that trend continues, because I would sure like to do well in my leagues, because in the leagues that I'm doing well in, I'm doing very well in. In the leagues that I'm not doing well in, I am pretty much last place across the board, so not fun on that end, but it's good to be back in the swing of things with the podcast and talking about fantasy baseball. And before we get into the rest of this episode, just a reminder that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you could send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We're on all of them: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever else you listen to your podcasts, we are there. So make sure that you follow us, and please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. It really helps us out and helps us with the algorithm, so please make sure that you leave a 5-star review if you have the time. Now, let's move into the news from this past week. We will start with one that's very old because John didn't talk too much about it, but everyone kind of knows at this point. But Ronald Acuña Jr. of the Braves was placed on the 10-day IL on Monday, May 27th, with a torn left ACL. He underwent surgery and will miss the remainder of the 2024 season. It's obviously such a big blow. The unanimous number one pick overall for fantasy. I had him in TGFBI. Of course I did. It's not like I was already doing terrible in TGFBI, but then you just take Acuña away from me. Awesome. You finally win the first overall pick lottery ticket, and it's such a waste. Like, I just can't believe it. Did you have Acuña anywhere, John? Because for me, I had him in two places, and it's brutal.
Yeah, I had him in my home league, which is an auction lead, so it kind of hurts even more. Oh. Because I chose to get Acuña. You know, I didn't luck into him with the number one pick. That league's kind of tough right now for outfielders. I started the season with Acuña, Mike Trout, and Tyler O'Neill, and a good couple days, all three of those were on the IL. So thankfully, Tyler O'Neill is back, and he had a pretty solid game today for the Red Sox. It's a little tough losing Acuña for sure. I spent a lot of money to bid for him, and all of that is now down the drain.
Yeah, that is rough. Like I said, whether you spent a lot of money in an auction or you lucked out to get the first pick in your draft, this is just a huge blow. And it's obviously old news, but we had to talk about it a little bit more in depth, because obviously Acuña is the rank one overall fantasy player. And after what he did last season, it just stinks to see him go down, especially this early into the season. Next, we have Sean Murphy of the Braves, who was out of the lineup on Wednesday after being hit by a pitch on his right elbow. X-rays came back negative, so he should be day to day. Kyle Tucker of the Astros fouled the ball off of his right shin in Monday's game against the Cardinals. He's missed 3 straight games and may not be ready to return on Friday due to his shin being bruised. Tucker should be able to avoid the IL, but definitely keep an eye on his status. Alex Bregman of the Astros was scratched from Wednesday's game with lingering left hand soreness and is expected to return on Friday. Christian Javier of the Astros was placed on the 15-day IL and will undergo Tommy John surgery. He will miss the remainder of the 2024 season. Blake Snell of the Giants was placed on the 15-day IL on Monday, June 3rd, with a left groin strain. An MRI showed that it's a mild groin strain, and he should be back faster than his last IL stint. Zach Gallen of the Diamondbacks was placed on the 15-day IL on Friday due to a grade 1 right hamstring strain. He was recently cleared for throwing, so he may return when first eligible. Yu Darvish of the Padres was placed on the 15-day IL on Saturday with a left groin strain. Joe Musgrove of the Padres was placed on the 15-day IL on Saturday as well with right elbow inflammation. Manny Machado of the Padres is considered to be day-to-day with a mild right hip flexor strain that he sustained when trying to beat out a double play. He was not in the lineup on Thursday. Corey Seager of the Rangers is considered to be day-to-day with a hamstring injury. He left Wednesday's game for precautionary reasons, so just keep an eye on Seager over the next few days. Hopefully he can avoid the IL. Jack Flaherty of the Tigers is confident that he'll make his next start. He left his previous outing on Tuesday after 5 innings due to back tightness. Juan Soto of the Yankees left Thursday's game against the Twins with left forearm discomfort after a lengthy rain delay. No further news is out about this, but I don't think it's too serious. He was playing fine the entire game. Then they went into a rain delay, and then they just subbed him out on the way out. So I'm just hoping that he had a little bit of a stomach ache, and they're just saying it's left forearm discomfort, and he'll be back in the lineup tomorrow. Clark Schmidt of the Yankees was placed on the 15-day IL on Thursday, May 30th, with a right lat strain. Gerrit Cole of the Yankees has begun a rehab assignment. He struck out 5 over 3 1/3 scoreless innings for AA Somerset. He'll need a few more rehab starts before rejoining the Yankees, but he should be back soon. Robert Gasser of the Brewers was placed on the 15-day IL on Wednesday, June 5th, with a left elbow flexor strain. Gasser will receive a second opinion, and more information should be known soon. John Means of the Orioles was placed on the 15-day IL and underwent his second Tommy John surgery on Monday to repair a torn UCL in his left elbow. He'll miss the remainder of the 2024 season. Andrés Muñoz of the Mariners is dealing with a lower back injury. We're currently waiting on the results of an MRI that he underwent to see if he'll need a trip to the IL. Apparently, he's going to be able to avoid it, and he might be available this weekend, but keep an eye on his status. Edwin Diaz of the Mets began a rehab assignment on Thursday. He's been on the IL with a right shoulder impingement. Starling Marte of the Mets was scratched from the lineup on Wednesday due to a right knee issue. Brett Beatty of the Mets was optioned to AAA Syracuse, but will be brought to London for that series against the Phillies. Omar Narvaez of the Mets was DFA'd, and both Jose Iglesias and Luis Torrens were promoted by the Mets. Willier Abreu of the Red Sox was placed on the 10-day IL on Tuesday, June 4th, with a right ankle sprain. Michael Wacha of the Royals was placed on the 15-day IL on Sunday, June 2nd, with a left foot fracture. Trevor Williams of the Nationals was placed on the 15-day IL on Tuesday with a right elbow flexor strain. Josiah Gray of the Nationals has been cleared to begin a rehab assignment. Reed Detmers of the Angels was optioned to AAA Salt Lake after a rough 7-start stretch. Connor Norby was promoted by the Orioles on Monday, June 3rd, and proceeded to get his first MLB hit, which was a home run on Tuesday. And then last but not least, Cade Povich was promoted by the Orioles on Thursday and pitched against the Blue Jays. His final line was not too great, but he pitched a little bit better than it showed. But that wraps up all of the news from this past week. John, any notes about any of these guys?
A lot of guys go into rehab assignments, which is good to see. Obviously, Gerrit Cole, Edwin Diaz, guys that you mentioned there. Of course, the unfortunate thing is John Means being out for his second Tommy John. That's really rough. Don't love to see that. Was hoping for some good things for him this season, but they just really haven't materialized there. But yeah, it's kind of the weird part of the season where a lot of these random injuries are happening to important players on your fantasy teams. You know, Yu Darvish, Joe Musgrove, Jack Flaherty. We'll see if he is able to stay healthy. Yeah, just a lot of random guys that are on the IL for 15 days. Hopefully that's all it takes, and they'll be back soon. But this is why it's so important to be just, you know, checking the waiver wires and pivoting on your fantasy teams, because you just never know when a guy like Yu Darvish, who has been really solid this season, all of a sudden goes down and you need to find a replacement on the waiver wire.
Yeah, there's a lot of big names that have been getting hurt. Thankfully, they haven't been too serious of injuries, like besides Acuna, of course, and a few others like John Means and Spencer Strider. Those ones are tough, but Every other one has been like minimal IL stints, thankfully. So that's good. Even Royce Lewis came back just recently and has like three games played and three home runs. He's an absolute unit, but he just got off of the IL after sustaining an injury in game like one or two of the season. So,
game one. Yeah.
Yeah. Game one. Ridiculous. So it's good to see that at least players are coming back in a timely manner, because we see some guys just go down and be out forever. And thankfully that hasn't happened too much. Obviously it happened to two big Braves players, but outside of that, it's been relatively okay. So hopefully it just keeps to minor injuries this season, because we don't want to see anyone miss a lot of time. But we are going to take our first break, and when we come back, we will talk about the player performances from this past week, so make sure you stay tuned. We are back, and it's time to talk about the player performances from this past week. From the weekend, May 31st to June 2nd, John, who performed well over the weekend?
Yeah, we are going to start with Christian Yelich of the Brewers. On Friday, he went 5-for-6 with two doubles, a run, five RBIs, and a stolen base. I don't think we've mentioned Yelich too much this season. We did talk about the Brewers in an interview with Josh Shaw, I believe, a couple weeks, maybe about a month ago. And at that point, Yelich literally had just gone onto IL, so we didn't really spend too much time talking about him there. And yeah, he's just had kind of a quiet season, been on the injury list for a bit. That being said, though, Yelich, if you have him in a league where you have multiple batting ratios, my home league's like that. I have OBP and slugging. Other leagues sometimes have average and OPS. He's been really solid. 314, 392, 514 slash line, and eight steals as well. He's still hitting the ball really hard, just the way that Yelich always does. Unfortunately, it's still going to the ground a lot. But maybe the good thing to take away from this season so far is that the ground ball rate has stayed the same, but the fly ball rate has gone up as the line drive rate has gone down. And typically, line drive rate is fairly random. It's not really something that we see steady from year to year. So the fact that his fly ball rate has gone up is pretty impressive. And, you know, getting two doubles and a steal on a day where he also gets five RBI is really nice. On Saturday, Yordan Alvarez of the Houston Astros went 3-for-3 with two homers, two runs, three RBIs, and a walk. This was vintage Alvarez against, of course, the Minnesota Twins. So just classic there. We did end up beating the Astros 2-1 in that series. But, of course, the one game where they won is when Alvarez and Kyle Tucker both hit homers. That being said, despite the two homers on Saturday, Alvarez hasn't really had the stellar year everyone was expecting from him. He's still good, of course. An 842 OPS and 12 homers is not nothing. It's just probably not first-round level production that you were expecting. His barrel rate has dropped quite a bit this season, but he is still hitting the ball hard, so there's absolutely zero reason to panic, but it is probably annoying that there's not much you can do about this slightly lower performance for Alvarez this season. And then wrapping up the weekend with Gunnar Henderson of the Orioles, also went 3-for-3 with a homer, two runs, an RBI, two walks, and a stolen base. I'll be honest, I'm not sure anyone expected this big of a step for Gunnar in his third year in the majors. He's currently second in homers, fourth in runs, 10th in RBI, and is slashing 264, 368, 580. He also has eight steals as well. Truly a five-tool fantasy player. There's not much that needs to be said after this combo meal on Sunday. Henderson might legitimately be knocking on the door of AL MVP just as a 22-year-old.
So yeah, this is a great list of players. We really haven't talked about Christian Yelich pretty much all season, and rightfully so, because he started off normal and not doing something crazy, and then he got hurt, and then he came back, and he's just kind of found his footing again. I mean, he's been really good, though. Like, his hard hit percentage is 95th percentile. His expected batting average is 96th percentile, so he's doing a lot of good things, just typical Christian Yelich things, but unfortunately, the typical Christian Yelich things is also like being out for a little with injury and missing a little bit of time and inconsistent gameplay. So when he's out there, when he's healthy, he is one of the best to do it. He's one of the best to play for fantasy. He is an OBP monster. He's getting home runs, steals. It's great, but he just has to stay healthy. So hopefully he can stay healthy, because he is very, very good and is having a great, great season. Yordan Alvarez, I'm going to speak about another Astros player a little bit later on, and I mentioned that basically there is a lack of offense overall across the league, and that's kind of an issue, and I see it going to everybody. Now, Aaron Judge has just kind of snapped out of being not so good, and now he's like the best player on the planet, so it's going to come around. I think now that it's June, we're going to start seeing a lot more offense. There's been a lot of rumors about the balls being dead, and I think it's affecting a few players. And you can see videos of just similar launch angles and similar velocity readings and hard hit percentages on certain balls. And then just seeing them cut and paste from one year to another, they're just not going as far this season. And I think that's affecting a lot of people's home runs totals. I think that's affecting a lot of people's overall batting average and BABIP. And I just think there's a big issue with the offense. And I think it's going to start turning around like right now. So it's good to see that Yordan's coming around. It's good to see that Gunnar Henderson is sticking good. And it's good to see that Aaron Judge is performing. So I think offense is right on the cusp of turning around. And it's great to see Alvarez having a pretty standard season. I think he's only going to get better, and I'm not worried about him at all. He's still hitting the ball very hard, like you said. So I'm not that worried about Yordan Alvarez. I think he's going to be absolutely fine. And then, like you mentioned, with Gunnar Henderson, I was definitely not expecting a step like this for him. Honestly, going into draft season, I was kind of actively avoiding Gunnar Henderson. And the reason being is he was going in like the second, third round. And with that price tag, I just didn't see what he would bring that would yield that kind of price, right? Like, I didn't see him going 30-30 or 30-40. I just didn't pin him for someone that good. Now, I had him pinned for like 25 homers, 10 stolen bases, maybe 15. And that's a great player, but not someone I want to take in the second round. But he is proving that, man, don't ever sell him short, because he has been amazing recently. So yeah, I am definitely a fool for not believing in Gunnar Henderson. He's so young, he's getting better and better, and he's in a great lineup. So all power to Gunnar Henderson. Way to go, man. You are killing it, and I'm sorry for doubting you.
Yeah, I'm just kind of thinking of like the other shortstops in that draft range, right? You're talking Francisco Lindor.
Yep.
Maybe Corey Seager.
Yep. Trey Turner.
Yeah. And I mean, all those guys.
Ellie was going around there too.
Ellie, yeah, for sure. So a lot of those guys like have, you know, better track records or have something ridiculous about them, like Ellie, which is his speed. And Gunnar was just like a really solid baseball player, but yep. Yeah, he's definitely taking it to the next level, which is cool to see.
Yep, I agree.
Moving on to pitchers from the weekend, we start with Brian Wu of the Seattle Mariners. Went up against the Angels, got a no decision in this one. 6 innings with no earned runs, 3 hits, no walks, and 2 strikeouts only there. Apparently, Wu had some arm stuff, as the Mariners like to say. So the Mariners actually held him to a limited pitch count in this one. He was only held to 66 pitches, which is insane considering that he threw 6 innings. The secondary also did come into play much at all, which kind of explains that only the 2 strikeouts. So it's hard to trust him with both health and figure out mechanics right now. Obviously, he was out for a good chunk of the season and then finally got back and then had that one weird setback. And I don't know, I feel like Seattle is kind of handling him a little weirdly. That being said, the Rangers are still great. And looking at his start on Thursday, that was also a great one against a poor A's team. He gets a 2-start week next week against the White Sox and the Rangers. And hopefully we can avoid arm stuff until then. On Saturday, Mitch Keller of the Pirates went up against Toronto, getting a win there with 6 innings, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. Mitch Keller has been on one for the last few starts with 5 straight wins, never giving up more than 2 runs, and has pretty respectable strikeout numbers through all those starts. He's had a 1.34 ERA and a 0.92 whip in those 5 starts, in contrast to his season numbers of a 3.42 ERA and a 1.22 whip. This Pittsburgh pitching rotation has really gotten good in a hurry, with the rookies of Jared Jones and Paul Skeens doing some pretty amazing stuff, but also veterans like Mitch Keller and Bailey Falter also turning in good starts as well. The thing to watch here for Keller is his walk rate. He had a similar run of brilliance in 2023, and that kind of fell apart with poor command. He's not necessarily like a guy who walks a ton of people, but in these past 5 starts, his walk rate has been around 3.8%. Meanwhile, his season average last year was kind of in the high 6s, which again is not a bad number. But when he's not walking guys, that's when he excels. And so we'll see if this sticks for him. Obviously, it's just one metric to look at in terms of walk rate, but overall, Mitch Keller has been really solid the past 5 starts. And then rounding out the weekend, Andrew Heaney of the Texas Rangers going up against Miami got a win in this one with 6 innings, no earned runs, 4 hits, no walks, and 7 strikeouts. Pitch against Miami and good things happen. I've personally wanted Heaney to be good for a very long time. But since that great stint with the Dodgers in 2022, where I felt a little validated, we just haven't really seen too much to get excited about, especially in his time with the Rangers the past two seasons. He showed a bit more of the Blake Snell blueprint in this start, but there's still too many fastballs in the middle of the zone that make me comfortable in actually rostering him. Just too many mistakes that can be taken yard, and that's kind of Heaney's problem. The slider is still great, though, earning 7 whiffs. I just wish he could put it all together for another run.
So Brian Wu is just absolutely filthy. I watched the entire start on Thursday against the A's, and he had a front door two-seamer on Abraham Toro that started at his back and ended up at the top of the zone. It was just disgusting. I mean, if you can watch that at bat, everyone that's listening, do it, because it was disgusting. That pitch was unhittable. It was so nasty for a called third strike. So yeah, Brian Wu is legit. It is strange because he did have that arm stuff, quote unquote, where after his first start back from the IL, he had the issue. But he's been good since then. There's been no problems. Obviously, they're kind of handling him with kid gloves because they only let him go 66 pitches in the Angels game. And then against the Athletics, he pitched like 85, I think, somewhere around there.
Yeah, 85. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think Wu is okay. Obviously, they're going to handle him with care because he is very young. He is someone that has the potential to be the best pitcher in their rotation. I think he's going to be dominant. And hey, I don't care if his pitch count is low. As long as he's being effective and is going 6 innings and getting quality starts, I could care less. So hey, I hope that he's okay. I hope that he can last the whole season, because if he does, I think he's going to be insanely good. He has like 6 starts now to start the season where he has a 107 ERA or something like that. I saw a pop-up of something on the broadcast that I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's like a 107 ERA through 6 starts, and it's the lowest of all time in Mariners history, beating out Randy Johnson, who had like a 159. It was a ludicrous stat, so I thought I'd bring it up, but of course I don't remember it fully, so I don't know how valid that is. But yeah, no, it's just insane. Brian Wu is really, really, really good. And if he's out there on anyone's wire, he shouldn't be, first of all. If you have him on the wire in any league, then your league is probably really shallow, or you just had someone who panic dropped him when he was injured. But go and pick him up. Go and check and pick him up, or try to acquire him for the low and see if you can buy low on him and say, hey, he's kind of hurt. His pitch count's kind of low. Who knows if he's going to get a lot of wins and quality starts. Try to pitch that to the guy who rosters him, because you should try to get this guy. He's going to be very good. Mitch Keller, like you said, his last 5 starts, brilliant. He's been very, very good. But that's kind of the essence of Mitch Keller. He's a quintessential cherry bomb. He'll have a stretch like this where you're like, oh my God, he's the best. And then he'll stink for the next 5. So hopefully this run continues, because he's been awesome. And then Andrew Heaney, to me, is just a streamer. Like, he'll have starts that are brilliant, but then the very next start, he'll get blown up for like 9 earned runs. And you're like, oh yeah, this guy, right? So to me, he's just a streamer, but hopefully in those times where you do need to stream him, he is very good.
Yeah, you were on point with the Brian Roos stat. He after this start, he has a 1.07 ERA, which is insane. And the cool thing about him too is that, like you said, he's doing this with a limited pitch count. I had him on my bench when he absolutely just destroyed the Dodgers a couple weeks ago. So I'm really hoping he stays healthy this entire season. Like, even if it comes with, you know, lower strikeout numbers in this start against the A's, you know, not to talk too much about it, but he literally only went fastball sinker. But like you said, that sinker is pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
If he can get those secondaries to work just a little bit more, he has this sweeper and a slider and a changeup. Obviously, if he doesn't feel great about them, don't use them. You know, if you're a good 2-pitch pitcher, be a good 2-pitch pitcher. But if he can get a little bit more with that secondary stuff, like, that strikeout numbers are going to go up even more, and it'll be exciting to see.
Yeah, so that's a sinker he throws.
Yeah, the StatCast calls it a sinker. Yeah.
Okay, because you could have fooled me. If you watch that clip, like I said, it looked like a 2-seam fastball. It didn't sink at all. It just kind of like hooked to the right. It was crazy. Like, the pitch was so filthy that, like, I don't think anyone could hit that, because it was unbelievable, especially to a lefty. It was just unbelievable. I couldn't believe what I saw. So if that's a sinker, that is disgusting. Yeah.
I mean, don't want to get too deep in the pitching dives here. That's for the other folks. But
yeah.
Yeah, his average on the fastball in the start against the A's, 94.3. His average on the sinker, also 94.3. So like, the dude is just kind of like cruising with like a really solid fastball, and then just this, like, I don't know, sinker, two-seamer thingy that's coming in at the same velocity but just has, like, weird, disgusting movement. And I'm sure that's, like, throwing off batters all the time.
Oh, yeah. No, he looks like a nightmare to face in the box. So Brian Wu is going to be great. I'm glad I got the stat right. I'm glad I did him justice. So yeah. Shout out to you, Brian Wu. That's unbelievable. He's going to be very good, everyone. Like, genuinely. Next season, we might be talking about him as a top 10 pitcher if he can go 170 innings. I mean, it's scary good how awesome he is. Moving on to Monday, June 3rd. Thanks to Christian Ottoman for the Hazed and Confused Hitter Recap article. We'll start with Nolan Gorman of the Cardinals, who went 2-for-3 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, 2 RBI, and a walk. Gorman has been the hottest hitter in all of baseball that isn't named Aaron Judge in the last 2 weeks. He hit 2 homers in this game on Monday and homered again on Tuesday as well, which made it 3 straight games with a homer until he went 0-for-4 on Wednesday. Gorman has regularly been hitting cleanup for the Cardinals, and he's sporting a 97th percentile barrel percentage and a 100th percentile launch angle sweet spot percentage, meaning that he's making incredible optimal contact with the ball. The hard hit percentage is only 33rd percentile, and he's striking out a lot, but Gorman is a very streaky hitter, and you just have to roll with the punches with him. But right now, those punches are haymakers to your opponents, so keep rolling them out there. He has been incredible. And then we have Mark Vientos of the Mets, who went 2-for-3 with a home run, 2 runs, an RBI, and 2 walks. Since Vientos got called back up and is now the everyday third baseman for the Mets, with Beatty being demoted, he's been amazing. Vientos specifically crushes left-handed pitching with a 1460 OPS so far, but he's held his own against right-handed pitching as well, so he's not just a one-trick pony when it comes to facing left-handed pitching. If you need help at third base or are in a deeper league with corner infield spots, I would definitely look to pick Vientos up to see what he can do. I'm not promising anything great, but he has a lot of power potential. He's making really good contact with the ball right now, and he has a really good eye at the plate at this very moment. So if those improvements keep up, Vientos could be a solid little gem from the waiver wire.
Yeah, I don't necessarily have a bone to pick with Vientos, but I did have him on my dynasty team for, you know, a couple seasons. And then when he finally got called up last year, it was just not good. But seeing him succeed this year has been great. I unfortunately dropped him from that dynasty team. I might need to check back and see if he's available on waiver wires, because I currently have Nolan Arenado as my third baseman there. And honestly, Vientos might actually be better than Arenado at some points this season. So shout out to him for kind of turning around the career just a little bit in the past couple weeks. I don't believe it, but hey, if it continues happening, good for him.
Yeah, he has prospect pedigree, and I just remember when we signed JD Martinez and he was primed to be like the everyday DH or third baseman, and then he lost the job. He was like bummed out. He was saying not so great things in press conferences and stuff. He was getting interviewed and he was like, yeah, I'm happy for the team. He's a good hitter. You could tell he was obviously upset that he was losing out on his opportunity. Yeah. And then when he got called up, he was decent but not great. And then he got sent back down and then he got called up again. And it looks like now that he has the full confidence of playing time and he's more confident in himself, he's looking to be much better. Like you said, I'm not too sure how much I believe it, but I think that with the pedigree and the power makeup that he has, he can be good for fantasy. How good? I'm not sure, but it's definitely worth riding the wave on him. Moving on to pitchers for Monday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the Goss Bandages SP Roundup article. We're going to switch things up with this one and talk about 2 poor performances, not only because it was a smaller slate on Monday, but because pitching wasn't that great on Monday. Outside of Zach Wheeler and Tarik Skubal, who held it down for the Aces Gonna Ace with some great performances, these two guys didn't do too hot. Kevin Gausman of the Blue Jays, the title boy himself, went 6.1 innings pitched, 6 earned runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts against the Orioles. Yikes. Now, of course the Orioles are a good team, but they tagged Gausman for 16 hard-hit balls. That's way too many. As Nick points out in the roundup, Gausman's fastball is extremely hittable right now. His fastball currently has a 99th percentile zone rate, and hitters are just crushing it. They know he's going to throw the fastball in the zone, and they're just taking it for a ride. For his splitter to be effective, he obviously needs to be able to throw the fastball 4 strikes at will, but he has to switch things up, or he's just going to have a terrible season, because my God, this is not looking good. And he was supposed to be someone that was considered a top 10 starting pitcher for fantasy. Unfortunately, his WHIP will most likely be high all season because it's already ballooned up to a large number. But hopefully, he can right the ship and get that ERA down for the rest of the season and kind of return that top 10 SP value. But Gausman has just been looking brutal. The strikeouts aren't there. The earned runs are high. The WHIP is high. I don't know. Gausman's kind of scaring me right now, but we know that he's a great pitcher, and hopefully he can turn it around. And then we have Mackenzie Gore of the Nationals, who went 4.1 innings pitched, 6 earned runs as well, 7 hits, 4 walks, and 2 strikeouts against the Mets. Gore has been terrific all season, and this was his first real blip. Now, if you didn't know, Mackenzie Gore had yet to give up more than 3 earned runs in a start all season long. So this was the first start with more than 3 earned runs, and 2 of the runs were tacked onto his final line after a reliever let the inherited run score. Obviously, that's on Gore because he left them on base, but he really only gave up 4 earned runs at his own doing, and then the next 2 came in from the reliever. This outing to me was an anomaly. I watched the entire start because, of course, it was against the Mets, and his command on the off-speed stuff just wasn't there. Right from Jump Street, he was spiking balls in the dirt, he was throwing things really wide, just non-competitive off-speed pitches. So it looked like he just didn't have a good feel, and the Mets were just on his fastball, singling him out every single chance they had, and then when he wasn't getting singled, he was issuing walks. So just not a good start for Mackenzie Gore. I'm a big believer in the breakout this season for him, which I know Nick is as well. He's been preaching it and putting him very high in the list. So I'm hoping that Gore returns to the breakout version of himself the next time out and has the feel for the secondaries, because that's a big thing for Gore. If he can execute that Blake Snell blueprint with that 96 to 97 mile per hour fastball, he's going to be excellent.
I was listening to The Craft, which is Nick's podcast with Eno, and they were talking about Gausman and the hittable fastball, and I was kind of reminded about a couple starts ago, and it's kind of a funny thing where, like, the Twins supposedly have, like, Gausman's number, and, like, he's just been bad against the Twins.
Is it like the Chris Sale versus the Orioles problem?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And yeah, like, he pitched against the Twins earlier this season, just got rocked, and at that time it was just kind of like, man, he's just, you know, not having a good day. The Twins are picking up on something there. And I'm not saying, like, the Twins figured something out necessarily, but it does feel like because of that start, like, baseball has kind of figured something out about the fastball. And it just has not been smooth sailing for him ever since. And it's hard to say that, like, I want him to be a trade candidate for in fantasy. Because I don't know if it's going to get better, right? Because he is a two-pitch pitcher. As soon as one of his pitches, like, doesn't start working super well, it ends up kind of ruining the other pitch, even if it's super good. I've seen this a lot with, you know, Joe Ryan, obviously, with the Twins. He's got his elite fastball, but his secondaries just kind of aren't there. Kind of the similar thing with Gausman. Obviously, the splitter is his bread and butter, but if that fastball isn't able to set up those pitches, then it just does not look great. But yeah, like, I still hope he has a good season. I've always been a big Kevin Gausman guy. And if he can turn around, that would be huge for not only the Blue Jays, but also for fantasy managers.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, well, moving on to Tuesday, thanks to Mark Stumiger for the Lau Chicka Wow Wow. Thanks for choosing that title to make sure we know how to pronounce Brandon Lau's name. It's not Lo, it's Lau. And yeah, great day for Brandon Lau. 2-for-4 with a double, a homer, 2 runs, 5 RBI, and a walk. Lau is maybe one of the most frustrating fantasy players out there. I jokingly say that, but I also kind of, there's a little truth behind that. Partially because of how inconsistently the Rays have used him over the past couple seasons, and then also because of his health issues. After a breakout year in 2021, where he hit 39 homers and almost had 100 runs and RBI, he's struggled to stay healthy, and then the Rays also just platoon him for no reason because they just have a bajillion middle infielders on that team. That being said, though, he's started so far in 18 out of the 23 games he's been healthy this season, and the Rays have been consistently putting him at the top of the lineup. He did bat fifth, I think, a couple days ago, but generally he's been batting second or third. On this game on Tuesday, he had 207 mile per hour plus hits, and through 49 batted ball events, he's got a 14.3% barrel rate. And that stat kind of starts to stabilize around this point in terms of batted ball events. So definitely he's not a bad pickup if you need some middle infield help. Talking about another second baseman, Ozzie Albies of the Atlanta Braves, 2-for-4 with a double, a homer, 2 runs, and 3 RBI. As we mentioned, of course, with Ronald Acuna gone, Atlanta still has some pretty good batters, but all of them have kind of been slumping at different parts of the season, and Atlanta's really going to need Ozzie and Austin Riley, to be fair, to come alive for the rest of the season if they're going to overcome the Acuna injury. It's been a challenging season for Albies as he's already dealt with injuries. He had that weird, I think it was a fractured toe when like a pitch hit his foot, and he was out for 2-3 weeks. But yeah, he still has some catching up to do. His homer on Tuesday was only his 4th of the season, a far cry from the 33 that he put up last year. And while his average and OBP have remained steady compared to last season, predictably his slugging is down by a significant amount. The barrel rate is also only in the 18th percentile, and that's a 50% decline compared to last season. So we need to see a little bit more offense out of Ozzie. Right now he's been a really good singles hitter, but unfortunately that's not really helpful for a guy who likely was drafted the top 2 second baseman, top 3, if you want to count Mookie in that. So Ozzie obvious, hoping for a little bit more offense from him as the season goes on.
For me, Brandon Lau is someone that I always want to roster in fantasy, yeah, and I never get the chance to. Like, he's either bad and on the wire and I just have no need for him, or someone else has him when he's good. Like, I just never seem to cross paths with Brandon Lau, because when he's hot, he is incredible. I mean, look at this game, a double, home run, 5 RBI. He balled out on Tuesday, and he's been very good for most parts of the season, but then he'll go on like a month-long slump or being platooned, and you're like, yeah, why do I roster this guy?
That's what happened in 2021. Like, I think he had like, I don't know if it was single-digit homers in the first half of the season, something ridiculous. Like, he was just like terrible. But the second half of the season, he was insane.
Yeah,
in terms of his homers. So he's still been incredibly streaky even in his good seasons.
Yeah,
so
he had 39 home runs in 2021. I mean, yeah, that's insane. That was in 149 games, too. So he is just so inconsistent, it's maddening. But when he's hot, there really isn't anything like it, because he just dominates. So I guess ride him out if he's out there, if you need help in that middle infield section. I mean, Brandon Lau is a very good option. And then Ozzie Albies, I'm not really too concerned. Like I said, in general, right now, offense is down across the board. Obviously, Ozzie's numbers aren't great, but they're not bad. 4 home runs and 4 steals. You really hope for more than that, especially at this point in the season, out of someone you probably took in the 2nd round. You know, like you said, he's a top 3 second baseman, at least in drafts. You know, it went Mookie, yeah, Betts, if you count him, Marcus Semien, Albies, and Altuve in any order you want. So regardless, he's in that top 4 area. And he had 33 homers last season, 13 stolen bases. He had 109 RBI, 96 runs. So you kind of draft him expecting that. And I think a lot of that price for Albies is with him batting behind Ronald Acuna, because you can assume he's going to have over 100 RBI if Acuna is batting ahead of him. Now with Michael Harris batting ahead of him, it's a little bit different. So I know Albies loses a little bit of value there. Austin Riley's been slumping. Marcelo Ozuna's been amazing, and Matt Olson's been slumping terribly too. So hopefully they can right the ship. They're a great team with a great offense, and they can definitely turn it around. Like, I think offense is just going to get better. Like, from this point on, after you listen to this podcast, I think offense is just going to be up as a whole, because every week I'm looking at my head-to-head leagues, all I'm seeing is like sub 300 OBP across the board for like every team. Maybe a few have like a 350 or 320, but it's like 270, 290 OBP. Home runs, it's like 5 in a week, 7 in a week. Meanwhile, last season, I remember multiple like 14 homer weeks, 12 homer weeks, 10 homer weeks. We're not seeing that this season, and I think it's going to change. So hold out on these guys. Don't panic trade them. Don't try to just flip Ozzie Albies for someone who's hitting home runs right now. I just think that offense is going to get better. So just try to leg it out, because everyone has been pretty frustrating. So hopefully it turns around in these upcoming months.
Yeah, I hope your theory of the dead ball is kind of correct, because you know, like for us who live in the more northern states, you know, you in New York, me in Minnesota, like we're kind of used to a little bit of a deader ball in the in the spring anyways because it's colder. But yeah, like it is kind of weird for a team in Atlanta to be struggling with homers this much. But yeah, hopefully it is kind of annoying that MLB loves to tinker with stuff like this. But yeah, I'm hoping for some more offense this summer as well.
Yeah, and we just don't know when they tinker with the ball either. That's the hard part. It's like they don't go, oh, yeah, we're making it so that the ball travels a little less further. I know we have, like, humidors now in every stadium and all the balls are the same thing, but there's something wrong with these balls where they're not traveling as far. I mean, Aaron Judge just recently popped off, but the homers were just down across the board, you know, from everyone. And you had a few guys that you expect, like Marcell Ozuna, to hit a lot of home runs and stuff, but even guys like Pete Alonso, they don't have 15 home runs. Matt Olson doesn't have 15. Like, you just expect some of these guys with a lot of power to be crushing the ball. And sure, they're slumping, but they're all hitting the ball hard and they're getting out. So that has to equate to something. And I saw a lot of people that are smarter than me talking about it on Twitter and on articles, just saying that the ball seems to be more dead. And I saw a lot of examples, like I said, of side by side of similar launch angles, similar exit velocity. And in 1 year, they're going for 440 feet, and this year, it's a fly out to the warning track. So,
yeah,
there's something going on. Hopefully, it turns around.
Yeah, I'll just put on my tinfoil hat and just tell everyone that they're still using juiced balls at Yankee Stadium. That's all I'm going to say.
That sounds good. Yeah, they're still doing the 62 home run Aaron Judge balls they're throwing out there.
Yeah, I'm not salty at all about the Yankees sweeping the Twins. Not at all. Nothing. In fact, I'm not salty at all. I'm going to even talk about Luis Hill and his performance on Tuesday against the Twins. Thanks to Nick Pollock for the Jesus Bizarro SP roundup there. But yeah, Luis Hill. Six innings with no runs, one hit, three walks, six strikeouts. Yeah, I'm just a little salty because Hill actually used to be a minor leaguer in the Minnesota system, and we traded him for Jake Cave, of all people.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, granted, he was a 19-year-old when we traded him. You don't necessarily project that a 19-year-old's going to have, like, one of the best fastballs in Major League Baseball, but you know, that happens. but I'm also a little salty because I had Hill on my home league fantasy team early in the season, but for anyone who's been tracking his season this year, he had this awful start against Milwaukee, and I cut him because I had to take some guys off my AL, and Hill made sense to be the person to get sacrificed. Of course, immediately after that start, he goes great for seven straight starts. So, you know, that's fantasy baseball. He does get the Dodgers next. That being said, though, he is a good enough pitcher, and the Dodgers aren't as scary as I think everyone's made out to them to be. Yes, they did just put up 11 runs today on the Pirates, but they were facing Bailey Falter. So, you know, there's that. But if he is able to kind of deal with the Dodgers, that means he's a legit guy. And so, yeah, I'm a little annoyed that he's not on my fantasy team. But also, yeah, shout out for the Yankees in doing a really good job in developing him. Speaking of the Dodgers, Jared Jones of the Pirates went up against them on Tuesday. Six innings with no one runs, three hits, three walks, and six strikeouts. He was amazing at the start, and apparently his at-bats against Mookie Betts were kind of fun. Maybe similar vibes to the whole Paul Skeens versus Shohei Ohtani at-bats that happened in the game after this one. But yeah, just a lot of fun 100-mile-an-hour fastballs from Jared Jones, and then a lot of good work from Mookie Betts trying to fight off a bunch of these pitches and, you know, get some foul balls. Really solid TV, seeing a good pitcher going against a great hitter. Jones is still pretty much a two-pitch pitcher. He had a couple curveballs in this one, but the mix is so good that, honestly, who cares? You don't love the three walks. The control is still kind of an issue for him, but the fact that he has had kind of a little bit of a struggle the past couple of weeks, and being kind of a home run pitcher, guy who's susceptible to home runs, being able to get only zero earned runs against the Dodgers is really solid.
So I am with you in a shared frustration of Luis Hill, because I mean, I have one great story and one bad story. So I'll start with the bad story, because in my home league, it's a 10 team keeper league, and it's shorter rosters, of course, and obviously 10-team. The challenge is knowing who to keep and who to cut. Yeah. And it's competitive. Like, when I say 10-team league, don't think that people are bad. Everyone's a really good fantasy player. We've all been playing fantasy for over 10, 15 years. So it's a very competitive league, and it's very fun. But since it's a 10-team league, you know, Luis Gil is someone who was a streamer at the start of the year, not someone who was drafted. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I picked him up to stream, and he had one all right start, but the rumor was he wasn't going to go six innings very often. And this league I'm in is a quality start league. So I can't really roster him if he's not going to get quality starts, right? And I had the same problem, which is coincidentally funny, with Spencer Strider the year prior, because apparently when he came up, it was like, oh, he's going to start, but he's not going to go six very often. And I was like, ah, man, the strikeout numbers are great, but I'm not going to get quality starts, so I can't roster him. Meanwhile, he went like six every start for the rest of the year and was a beast and then was drafted as the best pitcher in baseball. So unfortunate, but same thing with Luis Gil. I'd cut him, and now he's on someone else's team, and he's awesome, and someone can keep him in the last round if they want to. So it is disappointing in that regard. However, my good story is in my AL-only league, I drafted Dylan Cease as my SP2 when he was on the White Sox. And then he got traded to the Padres before the season started. Right. And I lost him immediately before he threw a pitch on my team. But my replacement was Luis Gil. So I kind of got a good trade in that regard, where I was able to pick up Luis Gil, spend some money in the fab budget for him to replace Cease, and it ended up working out. But I had one good story, one bad story, but Luis Hill's been awesome. I think it's a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Like, he's very good, but I think it's going to even out eventually. Don't expect this level of production all year, but sub 3 ERA, definitely possible. I would say he's going to live in like the 320 ERA range at the end of the season, but he could definitely pitch to a 270 ERA all year and be amazing with more than a strikeout per inning and a lot of wins being on the Yankees. So Luis Gil is dominant. You don't really want to get rid of him or trade him if you have him. He seems to be great. And then Jared Jones, yeah, he had a bit of a stretch where he was kind of struggling. The command was a little off. The performances weren't as dominant. But this was a great start against an amazing Dodgers team. And hopefully it continues. We just hope that he can keep going throughout the season, prove that he has the stamina to last all season, and just keep putting up some big strikeout games and 100-mile-per-hour fastballs.
Yeah, would be a big fan of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But we are going to take our last break, and when we come back, we will talk about Wednesday and Thursday's performances, as well as some streamers for next week. So we'll be back after this. All right, we are back, and it's time to get to Wednesday, June 5th. Thanks to Seth Klusmeyer for the Devastation Tied Hitter Recap article. We will start with Yiner Diaz of the Astros, who went 1-for-3 with a homer, a run, and an RBI, just a solo shot. But this was the third straight day in a row where Diaz has homered. Before these three home runs in the past three games, his last home run this season was on April 11th. That's pretty bad. So bad, in fact, that in 10 and 12 team leagues, I had cut him for guys like Patrick Bailey and David Fry. Now, I think it's worth picking him back up again if you dropped him. I did pick him back up in the leagues that I did drop him. And just hold on to him if you have him and if you were worried, because like I said, this whole podcast, offense has been down as a whole, and it looks like it's about to turn the corner, and Diaz kind of started fresh in June. Diaz has been hitting the ball very hard all season with an 88th percentile hard hit percentage, and the underlying metrics look fine. The only bugaboo for Diaz is that his ground ball percentage is at an all-time high with 54%, and the fly ball percentage is down 8% from last season. It was 29% fly ball percentage last year, it's 21% now. So I think that will correct itself as the months get hotter and the ball flies a little bit longer, and I think Diaz will finish the season as a top 5 catcher for fantasy. I was probably the biggest Yiner Diaz preacher this whole offseason. I think I drafted him in every single league I'm in. I traded for him in Dynasty. I did so many things to acquire Yiner Diaz this season because I just believed in him. I believe in the Astros lineup. And then the Astros as a whole have been slumping. Diaz has been slumping, but I think it'll turn around. So I still believe in Diaz. I hope he has a great season because I repicked him back up. So please, Diaz, stay true and keep hitting home runs for me. Next, we have Jamer Candelario of the Reds, who went 2-for-5 with a home run, a run, 2 RBI, and 2 stolen bases. Candelario got to Coors Field and decided to flip the offense switch to on. He's hit 2 home runs, stole 2 bases, had 4 RBI, and scored 3 runs in this series. Candelario has had an awfully slow start to the 2024 season, as most batters have, but with full playing time and regularly hitting in the 3 spot in the lineup, as well as having Great American Small Park as your home field, I'd look to add Candelario wherever I can because I can see him going on a bit of a hot stretch here with a great average, a lot of runs, a lot of RBI, some home runs, some steals. I just think he's a very solid baseball player, and we usually see Candelario pick things up towards the latter half of the season and just be a monster. So hopefully that rings true, and with his new home ballpark, he can be a beast. And then lastly, shout out to Rafael Devers, who went 2-for-3 with 2 home runs, 3 runs, 3 RBI, and a walk. He's been heating up this past month and has been incredible, so it's good to see Devers all the way back.
Yeah, I was there completely with you on the Yiner Diaz train. I picked him up in Dynasty. I drafted him in my home league, and then, yeah, it's been kind of tough for the last couple of months. I was really considering dropping him for Cal Raleigh. Because gotta love some big dumper on your team. But Yiner Diaz completely solidified his role on my squad because of these past few games. I think even with the ground ball rate down, that's not necessarily something that you can explain with the ball. That's more of a, you know, how you're approaching your pitches. But that being said, like, he was pretty bad for what we expected out of him, and I completely expect some kind of more regression to the mean for Diaz as the season goes on. And maybe there's something that goes on with the Astros where they, as a team, they kind of figure something out together, because other than Kyle Tucker and I guess Yordan Alvarez, right, that team has just been completely awful. So maybe they figure something out, even though I don't love rooting for the Astros. I do think that the team as a whole is going to get better. And then, yeah, with Jamer Candelario, I was super excited when he got signed by Cincinnati, and then it just has not panned out for him, unfortunately. Really has not panned out for Cincinnati in general. That team, even though they've got some really nice young stars, just have not been able to put it together yet. So hopefully something turns around for them and they get to take advantage of their home games. Looking to see some positivity there. And then, yeah, Devers, obviously shout out to Tanner McGrath, who we had on the pod last week to talk about Rafael Devers. And he's been absolutely raking. Unfortunately, today in the Red Sox game where they scored like 13 or 14 runs on the White Sox, all he did was contribute one run, which is kind of annoying. But he did have 2 homers the day before, so I guess I can't really complain about that.
Yeah, he contributed one run and then got pulled in like the 5th or 6th inning. So you just miss out on any extra at-bat. Same with Tyler O'Neill. Same thing happened with him. He got pulled as well. So yeah, it's frustrating. I love when teams put up huge numbers, but if your guy wasn't involved and then gets rested, it's like the worst thing in the world because you lose out on at-bats and stats, so it's rough. But I, too, was excited about Jamer Candelario with the Reds, and they are on a 5-game win streak right now, so hopefully that's turning things around. Ellie seems to be heating up again. It's just a lot of hot and cold with this team, so hopefully they have a lot more hot moments than cold. And yeah, no, Yiner Diaz, now, these last 3 games with the home runs, they were his only hits, so I'd like to see some more consistent hits, of course, sure, but I'm glad that he's rebounding because he was being benched a little bit for Victor Caratini. His playing time was pretty much every day for the most part of the season. Then he started struggling, and then he got some days off, and then he got multiple days off, and I was like, uh-oh, it's time to cut him, because if he's not playing every day, I don't know, I'd rather someone else, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But hopefully, like I said, with the fly ball percentage being down, hopefully that corrects itself, goes up a little bit, the ground balls go down a little bit, and he just gets more hits. Like I said, the underlying metrics are okay, so I fully believe in him turning it around, and the Astros in general turning it around, so yeah, I think Diaz will be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to pitchers from Wednesday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the Dormant Jormont SP Roundup article. We start with Nick Pivetta of the Red Sox, who went 7 innings pitched, no earned runs, 1 hit, 2 walks, and 9 strikeouts against the Braves. Now this is the Pivetta I envisioned during draft season. Pivetta has actually been great all season except for one start, which was his first start off of the IL, which we will give him a pass for because besides that, he's been incredible. Pivetta has a 3.40 ERA, a 0.94 whip, and 51 strikeouts through 42.1 innings pitched in 8 starts. The 4-seamer was thrown upstairs, the sweeper and curve were disgusting. He looks filthy and made easy work of a tough Braves lineup. You just love to see it. Keep running Pivetta out there every 5th day. He's amazing. 18 whiffs in this one. 37% CSW. Golden goal. Just everything you want to see out of Pivetta. He looks amazing. I'm so happy that he's healthy and pitching well. Just please, Pivetta, stay that way the whole season because you are fun to watch pitch. Next, we have Luis Severino of the Mets, who went 8 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 7 hits, no walks, and 4 strikeouts against the Nationals. Severino has kind of evolved as a pitcher, but not evolved in as like, wow, he's nastier now and it's amazing, but in a like, oh wow, this guy is just different sort of way. Severino is essentially Marcus Stroman or post-Tommy John Angels version of Noah Syndergaard. The stats look great. 325 ERA, 114 whip, 58 Ks in 72 innings pitched. A little lackluster there, but he's getting the job done. He's just not that Cy Young caliber pitcher that had gaudy strikeout numbers anymore. So as long as your expectations are tempered, Severino should give you reliable numbers all season. He's just not the 2017 or 2018 version of himself anymore, where he's going to pitch 190 innings and strike out 230 people. So don't expect that from Severino. But in totality, his season's been very good, and he might be a trade candidate at the deadline, where he might go to a team that will get you more wins. So just keep that in mind as well if you want to try to acquire Severino before the big bust happens and he goes to, like, let's say the Yankees again or something. You know, who knows? But Severino has been very good, just not striking out a lot of guys. And then lastly, Aaron Nola of the Phillies. He went 7 innings pitched, no earned runs, 2 hits, no walks, and 5 strikeouts against the Brewers. Even here, Nola goes, whee! His ERA is now down to 273, and I just can't stand him because every time I roster him, he stinks, and every time I don't, he's this. So, Nola, I can't stand you, but hey, kudos to you. Way to go.
Yeah, it's the every other year Nola, right? You don't trust him, and then he does well, and then you're like, oh, maybe I should draft him, and then he
burned
you. Doesn't.
Burned you.
Yeah. Yeah, the funny thing about the Nick Pivetta start, obviously, was I thought about sitting him against Atlanta, and then he actually, you know, did well, and I messaged Leo. I was like, damn, the dude absolutely shoved. I'm so happy that Nick Pivetta is doing well, because, yeah, he's so much fun to, like, kind of keep on your team and enjoy. So, shout out to Nick.
Yeah, no, he's been amazing, and Pivetta was showing glimpses of being great all of last season, and then it's finally clicking. So finally we have the Nick Pivetta breakout. Hopefully, just stay healthy, stay good. Please, 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 please.
Yeah, exactly. All right, moving on to Thursday. A lot of good games in this one. Starting with the hitters, though, we're going to start with O'Neill Cruz, who went 2-for-5 with 2 runs, 3 RBI, a homer, and a stolen base, which of course means a combo meal for Cruz in this very high-scoring game between the Dodgers and the Pirates. Cruz's numbers have not been what you expected from a young star, but in context, he still technically hasn't had a full season in the majors, despite having major league at-bats in the last 4 years. Yes, I realized in 2021 he literally had 2 at-bats, so I'm kind of nitpicking here. But then he sat for like the first half of 2022, and then when he came into the league, he was absolutely great. And of course, last year he broke his leg. So I feel like he's still adjusting to the majors, even though he is 25 now. The strikeout rate is still rather disgusting, not in a good way, at 35%, but the barrel rate is 17.7% with a 43% ideal contact rate. So you'd have to think that with those type of numbers, he should be getting good stats, and he just isn't right now. So I have to believe that ultimately the numbers win out. His stats actually reflect how his advanced stats are looking, but it might take a little bit more time than you might want to wait to see those numbers from Cruz. And then Adley Rutschman, 2-for-4 with 2 runs, 3 RBIs, and 2 homers. We talked about Gunnar at the start of this segment, and we're going to finish with Rutschman, who is also having a phenomenal season. The average is Joe Mauer-esque, which is 3.04, which of course still really isn't even Joe Mauer-esque, but it's pretty good for a catcher nowadays. The counting stats are also there, though. 32 runs, 10 homers, 40 RBI. Cannot complain with that. The walk rate has dropped by a bit compared to last season, but it hasn't necessarily resulted in a similar increase in strikeout rate. Adley's just making good contact, and I think we can be all content with that type of stat line.
So for O'Neill Cruz, I had such big expectations for him, especially after his showing in spring training, back and healthy, hitting the ball hard, and he's still hitting the ball very hard. Like you said, barrel rate 17.7%, 43% ideal contact rate. It's all right there. He still strikes out a ton. I mean, I've seen so many 3-pitch at-bat strikeouts for him. I've watched a lot of his at-bats, and I just see him looking at things, and sometimes the calls are a little off. He's a tall human being, and he kind of gets the Aaron Judge treatment, where if it's a little bit by his knees, which is lower than normal people, they'll call it a strike. If it's a little higher in the zone, they'll call it a strike. So it's hard for these taller dudes that have to have an increased zone, because anything could be a strike against them, and they kind of have to protect a little bit more than other people. So I think it's going to even out. Like I said, I think he's also a product of the environment. Like, he's got to not strike out as much, but when he's making contact with the ball, it's hard, and it's either going right at somebody, or it's a hit, or it's out of the stadium. I mean, he has 8 home runs this year, 5 stolen bases. I'm hoping he can finish somewhere near a 25 homer, 20 stolen base season. It might be a lot to ask for because of that strikeout rate. It might be a lot to ask for because just it's not trending that way, but I'm expecting big things out of O'Neill Cruz. I can see him going on a stretch where he is just unbelievable, and I'm really waiting for that and banking on that to happen this season. So hopefully O'Neill Cruz gives us something to work with. And then, yeah, Adley's just been awesome. I mean, he is such a reliable and great catcher to have in your lineup. He bats second regularly for the Orioles. He's batting right behind Gunner, right before people like Ryan O'Hearn, Ryan Mountcastle. Just having a really good season, and a 300 average from your catcher with 10 homers and 32 runs and 40 RBI, that is incredible. So if you roster Adley, I'm sure you are obsessed, because that is just such a nice asset to have on your team.
Yeah. That being said, you and I both would still have Yiner Diaz.
Yes, exactly.
Not because he's better than Adley, but because the draft capital
he's
is better.
He's cheaper, duh.
Yes, exactly. All right. Moving on to pitchers. I feel like I should just call this the Tale of Two Tanners, because I'm going to be talking about Tanner Bibee and Tanner Houck. We'll start with Bibee, though, who went up against Kansas City with 5 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. A very solid night for Bibee. Honestly, a great night for Bibee. I really wish he could have gone 6, but it is what it is. He went really slider heavy in this one. Most used pitch there, which is kind of weird. Normally he relies on his fastball, but it was working. He earned 8 whiffs, 9 called strikes on the pitch, good for a 38% CSW. For more analysis on Bibee, friend of the pod, John Foley, wrote a nice deep dive on him last week, looking into his fastball and kind of looking for some ride on that fastball. And then also, Pitcher's writer Renee Deckert also talked with Bibee. That interview was just published on Wednesday on the Pitcher's website. So lots of good Bibee-related content if you want to check that out. Moving on to Tanner Houck, he went up against the White Sox, got a win in that one. 7 innings with 3 hits, 2 earned runs, and 9 strikeouts. I may have accidentally cursed Houck, as I was actually planning to talk about him on today's performances. After 5 no-hit innings, I wrote his name in as kind of a placeholder. Was waiting for the game to finish to get his full stat line. Of course, then the Red Sox decided to just destroy Chicago White Sox pitching, and I think the top of the 6th was like a 20-minute half inning or something crazy like that. And then I guess Houck maybe got entered the bottom of the 6th a little rusty, and then he immediately gave up a hit, so he lost the no-hitter in the 6th inning. That being said, though, the slider was its usual called strike machine with 9 called strikes on 38 pitches, and the sinker was also dominant, 11 called strikes on that one as well. Despite ultimately giving up a run in the 6th and a homer in the 7th, Houck has continued his amazing season. Going into this start, he had a 1.85 ERA and a 0.96 whip, which are great numbers. The only thing really preventing him from being a true fantasy ace is likely the lower strikeout rates. 9 strikeouts of this one is a little bit of an aberration for what Houck usually does. And of course, being on the Red Sox, he doesn't really have a lot of win chances right now. But I am certainly not complaining about the rest of his contributions this season.
Yeah. Tanner Bibee is someone that I had pretty big expectations for this season, and he's kind of been hit or miss. He'll have some really good starts, but then he'll throw up some really bad starts. So he hasn't given me what I expected. I mean, obviously his rookie season was phenomenal. He was such a good pitcher and did so well. I mean, right now he still has a 3.74 ERA and a 1.17 whip with more than a strikeout per inning. So maybe I'm expecting just too much out of him, because he's been really good and he's been getting quality starts, but then he'll have starts like he did against the Angels and Tigers back-to-back on May 3rd and May 8th, where he had a 10.80 ERA in 5 innings and a 9 ERA in 4 innings. Like, that's not going to get the job done. But then he'll have good outings against the Twins, 7 innings, 8 Ks, 1.29 ERA and 0.71 whip. So he has some great starts, but he also has some clunkers. So hopefully he can even that out and just be good all season. And then Tanner Houck, yeah, he's been incredible. As you said, the 9 strikeouts is a bit of an aberration. He's done it twice before, and then he struck out 10 one time, but that was against Oakland, so does that really count? But he strikes out about 4, 5, 6 every time out, and he's been amazing. I mean, he really has. Like you said, the 1.85 ERA, 0.96 whip. He's getting a lot of quality starts, but the wins with the Red Sox, probably going to be low, and the strikeouts aren't the best, but they're serviceable. So Tanner Houck has been incredible. The Red Sox rotation in general, even with missing out on Chris Sale, who went to the Braves, Lucas Giolito is out forever with an injury. Their rotation is incredible. I mean, they're still missing Garrett Whitlock, too. So they have Houck, they have Pavetta, they have Brian Bello, who's been, he's all right. Cutter Crawford has been great. So, yeah, they've been really good. The Red Sox have a really good staff and definitely is exciting to see. But now it's time to talk about the streamers for next week. John, we have three pitcher streamer recommendations. Who are those three?
Yeah, I'm going to apologize for this list because it's not very good. I had some other options I could have put on this list, but I just didn't like any of them. So I thought I'd just get a little spicy with the options this week around. I'm going to start with Ryan Nelson. He's 3% rostered on Yahoo, 1% on ESPN, and he gets the White Sox next Friday. And that's pretty much the only reason he's on this list. The ERA and the WHIP have not been very good. He doesn't really get strikeouts. And the only good thing going for Nelson is the fact that he has a very decent walk rate. I hesitate to call it low because it is around like 5%, but it's good. He does occasionally get good starts, and against the worst team in the American League, this could definitely work out for him. If you're hunting for a potential win chance, I mean, the Diamondbacks still even aren't that great, but they're at least better than the White Sox. And maybe some improvement to your weekly WHIP totals, this might be the stream for you. And then Tyler McGill, 22% roster on Yahoo, 8% on ESPN. He gets the Marlins on Tuesday. This might be the start for him to turn things around. He had the great start against the Dodgers, and then just an absolute dud against the Nationals. So maybe actually having him face off against a terrible team isn't the best idea, but I don't think you're going to pass up this opportunity if you're going to look to stream. And then finally, Keaton Wynn, 3% on Yahoo, 1% on ESPN with the Giants. Honestly, there's no way this is actually a good stream, but I didn't like any of the other options I was seeing. He did have a tough gauntlet of the Phillies, then he faced the Rockies and Coors, and then he had the Dodgers, and all three of those were terrible. And then he had an IL stint. But right before that, he actually had a series of pretty decent starts. This isn't going to be his first start coming off the IL, or else this would truly be playing with fire. But he is scheduled to get the Angels this upcoming Saturday, and that team is just not very good. So, you know, a win possibility here as well.
So for these three, I like Tyler McGill the best, and that's just not because he's a Met. That's just because out of these matchups and out of the quality of pitcher, I think he is the best option. Then Ryan Nelson, because the White Sox are not good. And then Keaton Wynn. I don't like Keaton Wynn that much, but he has the ability to get you a win and not blow you up. So I think that McGill, Nelson, Wynn are all good options. I would personally go with Tyler McGill. Now, for a hitter recommendation, I just wanted to throw out the name Elliot Ramos of the Giants. He was a top prospect at one point, and he's been really, really hot. I mean, the last four games, he has 3 home runs, 6 RBI, 4 runs. He's just been playing really, really well. He was originally batting around 6-7 in the Giants lineup, but he's moved up to first and second. So I think if you're in an OBP league, if you need some outfield help, Elliot Ramos is a good option right now. So don't sell Elliot Ramos short. If he's out there on your wire, maybe put a bin on him, maybe try to get him if you need the outfield help, of course. But he's been very hot. He had top prospect pedigree, and he's finally coming around. So hopefully he can keep this going because he has the potential to be pretty good for fantasy. So just keep that name in the back of your mind, Elliot Ramos of the Giants. But that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Before you all go, make sure you follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL and send us your comments and questions to our email at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter at TheJohnKe. That's THEJOHNKE. And you can follow myself on Twitter at Regicidal. That's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. And please, once again, leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcher List Plus. By doing so, you could join us in the Pitcher List Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week. We will be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.